Yeah. So this past week's parsha, we find a very very interesting pasuk. The pasuk tells us, it's right before we set the stage, we know Moshe Rabbeinu goes ahead and asks Paro to go ahead and to release the Bnei Yisrael from their servitude, from their avdus, and Paro, of course, refuses. And the makos begin. Aaron goes ahead and stretches his hand over the Nile River, hits the Nile River, and we go ahead, the first mako of Dam. And the pasuk tells us something very, very strange. The pasuk tells us that after everything turns into blood, pasuk chav gimel, vayifen paro, paro turned, vayavol beso, and returns back to his palace. Velo shasli bo gam lezos. And he also didn't take this to heart. So the Meshech Chachma picks up very strange wording of the pasuk. Just go ahead and say he didn't take it to heart. What's this? Vayifen paro vayavol beso. He paro turns and he goes back to his palace. In what way does that go ahead and is that connected to him not taking it to heart? And the Meshech Chachma gives a very novel explanation. We know, how did the Mitzrim go ahead and how did the Mitzrim get water? So Rashi, of course, quotes the famous Medrash that what happened was they were forced to go ahead and they were forced to sell. The Mitzvah were forced to buy the water from Bnei Yisrael. They'd go ahead, they'd come to Bnei Yisrael, they'd ask them for the water, and they were forced to trade whatever it is they had to buy water from the Bnei Yisrael. The Meshech Chachma says, the Pasuk tells us what specifically Paro turns and he goes to his palace to teach us. See, Moshe Rabbeinu, for the first Makkah, he was raised in the palace. He felt for the people in the palace who raised him, who he grew up around. The Meshech Chachma says, Moshe, after everything turned to blood, we know what it is to be in a house with no water. Imagine if that water is blood. Moshe went back to the palace that he grew up in, and out of Hakaras HaTov, he turned it all into water, gave everybody water. The entire palace had water. Vayifen Paro Beso, Paro turns, Vayevol Beso goes back to his house. The world's gone crazy. His country's gone crazy. People are suffering terribly. Forced to go ahead and to buy water from the people they enslaved. But Paro's got the water flowing. When Paro goes home, he sees he has water. It doesn't touch him. He's all good. He's fine. The truth is, this attitude of Paro is really not a new attitude. We find this much, much earlier, according to the Chassam Sofer, in an amazing way. We know that all of the Shvatim were put to work in Mitzrayim, besides one, the Levium. So the Kohen and the Levium, why? The Chassam Sofer gives such a beautiful insight. The Chassam Sofer says, you think he was being nice? Paro is incredibly shrewd. What does it mean he was shrewd? Paro went ahead and his astrologers told him, listen, many years earlier, there's somebody that's going to go ahead who's going to redeem the Jewish people, take them out of their servitude. We can only tell you what Shevet he's going to be born to. He's going to be born to Shevet Levi. Paro says, I know how to end the rebellion before it ever begins. Everybody else is going to have to work. Everybody else is going to have that avodah kasha, except for Shevet Levi. They'll be able to chill out. They'll be able to take it easy. They won't go ahead and be under that whip. He'll have nothing to rebel against. I ended the rebellion before it ever began. You see, because Paro, as we see, as long as I'm okay, as long as I'm comfortable, the water's flowing in my palace, my people could be stuck with blood. It makes no difference to me. He doesn't feel it. He's not Samlev. He doesn't take it to heart. This is the same idea he projects. This is the same idea he projects on Klal Yisrael. As long as Shevet Levi is comfortable, they're okay. He's not going to go ahead. No one from there is going to stir up trouble. They have it good. The rest of the Shvatim there, he's going to care. He's going to empathize. He's going to see it. He's going to be care enough to risk his life, to risk his own comfort. No way. But of course we know that's Dafka. Moshe is Vayara Sivlasam. Not only does Moshe doesn't grow up with Shevet Levi, Moshe grows up in the cradle of absolute luxury of the palace. And still, Vayetze, he goes out and he sees their discomfort, he sees the servitude, he sees their pain. What it means to be a Jew at the very beginning, what it means to taste Geula, is not only to see the stuff, but to empathize and to go ahead and to do something about it. To feel so connected. One Jew feels so connected to another. The pain of another. I'll share an amazing story. There's a Dr. David Pelkowitz, I'm sure many of you heard of him, he's a well-known speaker, a psychologist. He told a story about his grandfather, Rav Ephraim Pelkowitz, who was a Rav in Connecticut. What was the name of the place in Connecticut? Bridgeport, Connecticut. What happens is, a Rav in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and he lost his Eishes Chayil for many, many years. He had been, in his younger years as a kid, he learned in the Slobodka Yeshiva, the Yeshiva Slobodka, went to Bridgeport for many years, tried to build a community, which is now pretty much has died out. But he lost his rebbe in some of the most difficult months of his life, incredible loneliness. One day there's a knock on the door of his home. He opens the door of his home, and standing there with a little suitcase is the Gadol Hadar of Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky looks at this old friend of his from Slobodka, and he says, Rav Ephraim, the pressures, the constant questions and pressures of, it's getting to me. Do you think it'd be possible I could vacation here for a little bit, for a few days with an old friend? I could have a little bit of refuge here? Of course. Dr. David Pelkowitz says, let me tell you something. I promise you, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky did not have to go to beautiful Bridgeport, Connecticut to go on vacation. It was an incredibly empathetic and sensitive way to go ahead and to help an old chaver who was suffering, who was going through difficulty. And I just ended the story. If you heard this, I apologize. I saw some of my friend's new book. He tells an amazing story. There was a woman who had, I could relate to it, had twin girls. They were 3 years old. She was having a very difficult time. They start running in two different directions. And her husband says, listen, there's a hotel, some retreat. Says, look, let's get away for Shabbos. You don't have to cook, you don't have to clean. They go to this hotel for Shabbos, and he sees his wife. It's like Mechaim Eisen, brings her back to life. Okay. He says to his wife, listen, why don't you stay here for the rest of the week? I'll go back to work, and I'll pick you up before next Shabbos. I see she says, you know what? Okay, thank you. She goes ahead. He goes back to work, leaves her there. She comes into the dining room one day to go ahead to wash for the meal. She washes for the meal. She takes her eyes off the kids for 2 seconds. She comes back to the table. One of the 3-year-old girls, toddler's gone. She's looking around the dining room, nothing. Can't find her. She starts getting nervous. She goes out into the lobby. She's asking people. She takes her, they're identical twins. She takes the 3-year-old girl that's there. Did anyone see a girl like this? People, no idea. There's a group of Beis Yaakov girls there, standing there. One of the girls, like the leader of the group, comes over and says, what's wrong? She says, I don't know where my daughter is. My baby daughter is an identical baby daughter to this girl. This girl takes charge. She says, you go there. She splits all the girls up in there. You go to this meeting room, you go to the pool area, splits them all up, sends them out, and they all disperse. We meet back here in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is. They go all over. The mother's nervous. One by one, each group keeps coming back empty-handed. No little girl. Finally, that girl who organized everything, she comes back holding the little girl. The mother is overjoyed, all happy. She says, where did you find her? She says, in one of the meeting rooms. Two of the girls say, we checked there. This girl says, who found her, says, organized everything, says, did you look under the tables? She was sitting in the back of the meeting room under one of the tables. They're like, no, we don't look under the tables. So they all leave. The mother says to this girl who organized, can I just ask you a question? I don't know, everyone else looked. You put so much into it. You took charge. And you're the one who found her. So where do you get that sensitivity from? The girl's quiet for 1 or 2 seconds, like a little bit of a sad look on her face. And she says, I'm the older sister of Leiby Klatsky. And the woman didn't have to say anything else. That was the boy who was lost in Borough Park. And Nebuch was on his way from camp, was found by his deranged Jew who murdered him in a very grotesque way. She says, I was his older sister. She learned from her pain, from her to go ahead and that sensitivity, that empathy for other people. The Jewish people, we've been through enough together already. We've suffered enough together already. Look what's going on in France, you know. So guys, sometimes in yeshiva, oh, it's terrible. Thank God I don't live in France. I'm so happy. That's not the answer. Just to feel what they go, what they must be go, what it must be like to walk into. Who hasn't walked into a makolet, into a grocery store, Erev Shabbos, to put yourself in their feet, in their shoes for a second, to feel what it is, to daven for them, to recognize what it is. That's what's going to get us out of this golus that keeps growing darker by the day.